Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 26th day of September, already 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and this evening I want to do something a bit different when it comes to taking a look back at the news and looking ahead at what's coming, because it's more and more obvious that what's coming is really ugly, and it's coming ever faster to boot. Here, though, at least a quick headline, courtesy of Christina Leyland, the Gateway Pundit, to set the stage. Breaking, it said on Friday morning, North Carolina joins Michigan and Pennsylvania, swing states all, in accepting late ballots for 9 days, at least so far, after the election, and implementing what they call ballot harvesting, where basically you have ballots, but no ID, no chain of custody, and an open invitation to fraud. So where I want to go today, I actually have a title in mind. I'm not going to give it to you right up front. I will suggest that at one point I had planned on calling this show Hazing a Nation, because it occurred to me that, well, let's just say several decades back when I was in college and I pledged to a fraternity at an engineering school, which is not to be confused with the Animal House kind of stuff. We were pretty straight-laced and in a lot of respects very, very different. Nevertheless, we at least heard about what hazing amounted to. And the thing that kind of put it in my head was this idea of, yeah, it was a joke, but if two or three pledges got together in the hall and an active saw the pledges within, let's say, oh, I don't know, 6 feet or so of one another, he would declare a riot! Riot! We got too many people gathered together. And I couldn't help but think about that as I hear literally the hazing a nation that's going on today under the guise, at least, of we have to have a police state to protect you from, well, something that probably you've never seen, haven't heard much about, and is not nearly killing as many people as what we're doing allegedly to stop it. But that's where we are. Hazing a nation. Okay, well, again, it occurred to me that doesn't go far enough. And of recent, in recent weeks, I've talked a little bit about the date certain. We're getting closer by the day to that date certain. On November the 4th, if not before, we have a number of reasons to think that things are, well, we saw it in Louisville, Kentucky this week, already hitting the fan. And it's not like we haven't had riots in Portland, Seattle, and all the usual leftist enclaves prior to this anyway. It's just that the now that the gloves are off and the stops have been pulled, things are rapidly spiraling out of control. So we've talked about a date certain. What I want to do today is at least to begin by saying what I'm going to talk about this show is, in fact, very real. It's not merely a date certain. It's a date that is coming upon us. And with that in mind, I want to go through several things that will kind of set the stage. I'll give you the title shortly. But I want to begin with this piece. This is one of the building blocks for where we're going to go. This comes from Chris Farrell at the Gatestone Institute, and it's called How to Steal an Election. Now, in here are really just some compilations of things that I've talked about on this show and on the news shows as well for a while now. But if you remember the so-called Transition Integrity Project, how's that for a gross misnomer? And the author correctly calls it one of the greatest public disinformation campaigns in American history. On later part of August 2020, TIP released a 22-page report, which was wargaming in their terms, four election crisis scenarios. Yes, because either these people were far-left politicos or rhinos and essentially never Trumpers. They all had the same concept. What would be the worst thing that could happen? Well, obviously Trump being allowed to continue in office, whether he wins massively or just a little bit. And even they said if Biden doesn't win massively, well, we got trouble, right, friends, right here in River City. Well, it's not with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and it stands for pool. It stands for politics out of control and literally a police state. But yeah, what they said was each of their four scenarios resulted in street violence and a political impasse, and they made darn sure that that's exactly where we're headed. Here's the point. The TIP report introduces, says the author, the threat of terror and street violence to the general population as something they've been working really hard to bring about, and now that they've accomplished it, it is the normal or expected outcome. And yep, that's what we're going to hear over the next few weeks. Expect violence in the aftermath of the election, because that is kind of like COVID-1984 and the lockdown that never ends. That is the new normal. And oh yeah, Trump made us do it. The devil made me do it. Well, no, it's Trump that is the new devil to the far left at this point, and he made everything bad happen. Who's paying the bills for Tip and its affiliates, asked the author. Well, we'll come back to all of that. But the key here is the following. What do the so-called journalists in the news media and the babblers on socialist media have to do in order to win the upcoming election, or at least convince people that the fix is not in and that what's happening and what is going to happen is what had to happen, and the planned revolution nationwide is exactly where we were headed? Well, answer, easy, says the author, publish a report entitled Preventing a Disrupted Presidential Election. And in one of the greatest disinfo campaigns in American history, again, the left and their never-Trumper allies under the nom de guerre of Transition Integrity Project released a report, and they said, here are the four scenarios. A decisive Trump win, a decisive Biden win, a narrow Biden win, and a period of extended uncertainty after the election. Notice a narrow Trump win isn't one of them. Well, that must mean what they mean by an extended period of uncertainty after the election. If Trump doesn't win by a big enough landslide to make it really clear, then there'll be a period of protracted, extended uncertainty after the election. And that literally is where we're headed today, and it's the key element that's going to tie a number of these things together. The idea is an information warfare strategy, continues the author, employed for revolutionary political purposes. And it is sophisticated and multifaceted, because the TIP document lays the groundwork for consensus from the news media and socialist media narratives. And by the way, if you don't appeal to the consensus, if you don't toe the line, they're going to ban you, shadow ban you, or outright ban you, or cut you off and restrain your searches and all kinds of related things. We've already seen all of that in progress. They've rationalized now what they're calling unconventional strategies for generating maximum confusion and turmoil about any unfavorable election outcome. What's an unfavorable election outcome? Anything other than a Bolshevik revolution and complete socialist takeover by, well, who? The preferred Soros puppet, Kamala Harris. And I remember, just about anybody with half a brain knows that Joe Biden has less than half a brain, and he's not fit to sit in the Oval Office. Probably would make a mess behind the desk and require a considerable amount of babysitting anyway. Drools in his own mask. Okay. You know, am I being cruel to the guy? No, the man has no business whatsoever being on any presidential ticket. Even the idiot party or the dumb and dumber party would recognize what senility looks like and how, unless you're just plain crazy, you wouldn't pick a senile person to sit in the Oval Office. And what is the key here? Well, he says the way all of this is playing out relies correctly on the fact that there will be a low awareness, in other words, an ignorant or low energy response from the political right to counter what they're doing until it's too late. Arguably, it's already too late. And is it possible, he asks, that the leadership of the American left, along with their never-Trumper allies, are busy talking themselves into advocating and promoting street violence in response to the next election? The answer is obviously yes. The TIP report says, we assess with a high degree of likelihood that November's elections will be marked, and if they have anything to do about it, and they will, by the following: chaotic legal and political landscape. And again, this is the plan. He points out that the TIP report itself is an exercise of raw political power. Public policy strategies and political intelligence are being fused by the actions of this so-called Transition Integrity Project and all of those that aren't calling it out for what it is. It's being implemented in a written plan, and it contemplates and even indeed encourages street violence to affect the outcome of the election. And here is how the news and socialist media narrative is coming together and what you will see, hear, and literally live through over the next few weeks. Yes, expect violence, not only in the lead-up, but especially in the aftermath of the election, because that's the new normal. Trump made us do it. Okay, so there we go. One more quick setup here, and I'm telegraphing where I'm going with the title. This is a piece from Jim Rickards via the Daily Reckoning. I've always admired the Daily Reckoning and the writing that they do. They have a pretty good set of people there calling what's going on and what's likely to follow. Rickards is primarily a currency analyst, and he looks at economics, and of course the focus of this one has to do with your investment choices, but it's bigger than that. Investors, he says, though, need to be on guard against at least one or more surprises that can come anytime without warning over the next less than 2 months at this point. Let's call them wild cards, he says, for the election season. And it's not hard to forecast that at least one, probably more than one of them, will happen. So here's number one. Now, this is interesting, and I think these are the kind of things that people need to be aware of if it's not obvious. First one is the replacement of the senile one, creepy quid pro Joe Biden. Quite frankly, I've been expecting that. And maybe this week, folks, we saw another move in that direction with the release of the Senate report, actually two committees in the Senate issuing a joint report basically saying a creepy quid pro Joe Biden and his crooked son Hunter have been engaged literally in all kinds of financial and other chicanery that have compromised national security and worse. Again, the man has no business being on a presidential ticket. The only saving grace, I guess, at this point is Biden can claim with some degree of truthfulness for the first time in his career that he doesn't remember all the criminality because he's too senile and he's forgotten it. But in any case, the wild card, says Rickards, is the high potential that Joe Biden will be removed from the ticket soon and replaced by somebody, anybody, that is less obviously senile. He suggests it might be New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, the one that you could call the elder home executioner or the senior slayer. This is the guy that put so many people with COVID into the old folks' home so that he could crank up the death statistics. And indeed, he should be wearing an orange jumpsuit, not being on the ticket. But hey, given what they've got, I guess any port in a storm. The Biden campaign strategy, says Rickards, so far has been to keep Biden under wraps, stuck in his basement. He does not do press conferences. His few interviews involve literally not just softball questions, T-ball, if you've ever seen that. They tee up the ball for him and say, come on, Joe, take another swing. You can do it. And then they try to ignore the fact that he's got an earwig in and can't even read the teleprompter correctly. Politics aside, the thought of Biden having to react in the midst of a crisis or a war will embolden Americans' enemies and should chill Americans to the bone. I think that's beyond obvious. The crunch will come. Here we go. The first of several date certain that we'll talk about today. The crunch will come on September 29th, which is the date of the first presidential debate. And again, any way you slice it, you can kind of see how this plays out, right? Will the debate be allowed to happen? Will they come up with an excuse in advance? Trump is says Rickards, an underrated debater. He has more command of the facts than critics will give him credit for. He'll do even better, and he did well against Clinton, the Hitler-y version back in 2016. He'll do the same or worse if he faces Biden. I've heard other people speculating. Indeed, the biggest challenge Trump will face is not to slay Biden so hard that he comes off looking like a bully of the poor, ignorant, little, dumbed-down school kid who can't find his way out of the bathroom and onto the playground. It literally is that is the biggest challenge that he will face. How do you deal with somebody who's senile and call him out without seeming cruel and getting Biden all confused and pointing out that he can't read the teleprompter or, you know, hey, look at the earwig in there. He can't even recite what he's being told to say. Now, there's another possibility, of course, and that is if they wear a mask, I've suggested this, I'd put a body double in for Biden and make darn sure he doesn't take it off. And they can probably get away with that. Some say they may have done that with Hitler 4 years ago. But here are the problems. The real problem, again, is not whether Biden can win a debate, says Jim Rickards. It's whether he can stand on the stage and speak and act coherently, even for a short period of time. Given rehearsals and medication, that will no doubt prove exceedingly difficult. So the options for the Bolsheviks are to replace the Biden for the debate, before the debate, which could be done by the DNC. They don't even have to pretend that they're going to go through the motions. They just do it. They could cancel the debates, or they could go ahead and hope for the best. And letting Biden go live on stage with Trump probably is the riskiest choice of all. Canceling the debates, no doubt by playing the COVID card, is the solution that carries its own costs, and it highlights the problem, which is cognitive decline. that it was meant to solve. So there's no good solutions to having a mentally impaired candidate, though in a normal election cycle against a conventional Republican incumbent, Biden clearly wouldn't stand a chance and nobody would even try this. But they've been setting this up for multiple years. And it's not at all a coincidence that Biden's cognitive decline has been covered up by a compliant media. Now, I guess with that, what I will do is pause from the story here. He's got a couple more wild cards he's going to cover. But I will mention, because I've already used two of the names that kind of got me thinking in the direction I'm headed today, the setup was the first one. If you think about the setup, we've seen this coming for a long time. You had the setup, even prior to Trump's inauguration, with all of the pieces that were put in place, from the crooked members of the FBI, the NSA, CIA, and various never-Trumpers that were installed within the cabinet, or that were holdovers and so forth. It was all about Russia, Russia, Russia. Oh, we have this horrible thing. We're going to bug the guy. We'll commit all kinds of crimes using FISA and our enemies list, and if we can get away with it, and so far, in spite of the fact that most of it has been revealed, they still actually have. So you have Russia, 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 you had several other gambits that played out in the form of various types of coups, and then, of course, the impeachment itself, all of which has amounted to a three-year setup. A three-year setup to get us to this point. One of the things that I've pointed out for years, and it dates back to Adolf Hitler and to the Mein Kampf, Big Lie, and then the various socialists and Obama mentors, the infamous Weather Underground radical Bill Ayers, and then Saul Alinsky and his Rules for Radicals, who basically just repackages Adolf Hitler's Big Lie concept, and that are simply saying, look, you accuse your enemy of doing what you yourself have been doing for so long, and intend to keep doing. Just make sure to accuse your enemy first. And then keep telling the same big old lie, and it will stick. All right, all of this, again, has been a three-year period to get us where we are today. It's the setup. The setup. Okay, are you ready? Time to lay out the title. Some of you have probably already figured it out. What we're seeing is basically a retread of an Academy Award winner and one of the finest movies Hollywood ever made, The Sting, with Paul Newman and Robert Redford. And if you remember the movie, it's all about what grifters or con men back in the Depression era 1930s called the Long Con or the Sting. It took place mostly in mobland Chicago and was extremely well done, very well executed. The music is downright legendary, and the very style of the picture does a great job of setting up the 1930s era milieu. Had probably one of the finest plot twists and surprise endings in movie history up until that point, and it used a very clever title card way of introducing each of the sections in the movie. And the first one was called The Setup. And that leads us to the second one, which we are already essentially past, or at least well into, and that's called The Hook. In the movie, The Hook was where the protagonist, as it turns out, Redford's Johnny Hooker, a.k.a. Kelly, and Paul Newman's legendary grifter, Henry Gondorf, set up Doyle Lanigan, the bad guy mobster, via a poker game played on a train so that he would have a reason to want to fall for the rest of the big con that was coming. That's The Hook. And in the case of America, in the land of hazing a nation, The Hook turns out to be what? It's a 1-2 punch, literally. It's the COVID-1984 plandemic. And when that looked like it might back off a bit and we needed a reason to continue the lockdowns, but in a whole different way and to set up for what was coming, The Hook continued with riots all across the country. Those are still in progress. The Hook isn't done yet. But that takes us to the third of the various title cards in the Sting. And this one was called The Tale. The tale is the story. What are you going to set up and how are you going to do it? Well, folks, we began the setup of the show here with the tale this week. And the tale, of course, had to do with TIP, the Transition Integrity Project, and getting people convinced that, oh, no matter how it plays out, there is going to be hell to pay, there is going to be violence. It's the new normal, and it's all Trump's fault. So we've got the setup, the hook, and the tale. And that is followed by the fourth of the segments introduced by those title cards in the movie The Sting. This one's called The Wire. And without going through the whole movie, if you haven't seen it, I would encourage you certainly to watch it again. It's a whole lot of fun. It is so well done, so well acted, so well crafted that it truly is on just about everybody's top 10 movie list of all time. But the third section of the tale is followed by The Wire. And how does The Wire fit in its very real America 2020? Answer? Well, The Wire is the election fraud. It could be done electronically. Indeed, that was how it was done so often in 2016 and then literally without bound in 2018. But this year they've added a new element to The Wire. It's not just election fraud. And by the way, for those that say, oh, is that even possible? Remember Diebold and some of the other electronic voting machines that have been so hackable over the last few years, are in fact even owned by some of the very same people and through some of the very same chains of organizations. If the name Soros rings a bell, you might see where I'm going, that have been involved in so much of this. As an engineer, one of the things that really struck me when I first heard about election fraud and can you really rig electronic voting was the following. And I remember doing code reviews when I was a senior engineer, and we say, okay, how can I review thousands upon thousands of lines of somebody else's code? Answer, we read it, and we have a number of talented people sit in a room and ask questions of the designer. First question I would ask, having looked at what I've seen from these election fraud-enabled voting machines, is why, oh why, would anybody ever allow floating point mathematics to be used in the software of a voting machine? Okay, an integer, you know, is a number like 1, 2, 3, and it has no decimal point because it doesn't need one. It's a number. It's used for counting things like, well, I don't know, votes, maybe. What is the point of having 1.307615 votes? Only one I can think of is if you want to be able to rig the system and enable fraud and make sure that you at least tailor it so that it's a little bit more difficult to detect, right? You get much above 8 or 10%, it's kind of obvious that maybe we're jiggering the figures here. But yeah, there's no reason, no conceivable reason for allowing any kind of floating point mathematics in a voting machine set of software unless your intent is to rig it. Well, all of that, of course, has to do with what's coming up, the election fraud. And as I mentioned, now we have a new element. Oh, booga, 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 COVID virus, so people have to be allowed to vote. Vote early, vote often, and vote over and over again. We'll let dead people vote. We'll let their dead pets vote. We got all kinds of ways of voting. 80 million ballots, and that's just so far, folks. And if you do this by mail, guess what else you can do? I've got stories just from today. Here's one that's just hot off the wire before we got going here today about how Wisconsin, they have found a whole bunch of ballots. They investigate absentee ballots found in a ditch. FBI probes discarded pro-Trump ballots in Pennsylvania. Do you get the picture here? And furthermore, hey, can't you tell which are the Republican districts by looking at, say, the zip codes on mail? And if you just want to get rid of a lot of them, you just do sorts by zip codes to destroy those. Not to worry, we've got millions upon millions of fresh, new ballots all set to go in. To say that it's rife for the probability of fraud is a gross understatement. But really, that leads us to the place where I think things really, they really get ugly. I'll go to the break with Jim Rickard's summary of the mail-in ballot situation. He says the election day chaos resulting from a surge in mail-in ballots is a pretty obvious, hard to dismiss. And by the way, these are not traditional absentee ballots that have been long used. They've proved useful, and there have been some pretty significant safeguards put in place. Almost all of those have been disregarded, and oh, they'll tell you they're not, folks, but let's not kid ourselves. If you replace polling places and voting booths and all the normal safeguards, many of us, that would include your host in years past, have been a poll watcher. I have taken ballots in a locked box to the precinct locations and so forth. There are a number of ways of ensuring that the ballot boxes are locked. No, they're not foolproof, but let's put it this way. They're a hell of a lot, and that's by design, safer than what is being done this year. Fraud City. And of course, part of the idea here is to reduce the American people's confidence, rightly, in a system that they know darn well is being gamed, rigged, and set up for The Wire, part of the Great Big Sting, currently in progress. And, of course, where this is really crucial is in the so-called swing states, like Michigan, where Trump in 2016 allegedly won at least by a mere 10,700 votes. But there are literally millions of mail-in ballots already in play, out there on parade. Well, or at least they will be. That means just a relatively few that you have to rig in order to swing a state like that. We'll pick it up there when we get back. Back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I am your host, Mark Ott, and I can tell you now, yeah, you figured it out, the title for the show today is The Sting, based on the 1973 movie of that same title, certainly on my personal list of favorite films of all time. And I was going through in the first segment the various title cards or chapters in the movie, and they apply very much to what's going on in America with a K today, starting with the setup, which took about 3 years for the far left to get in place, Russia, 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 impeachment, and so forth. Then the hook that included the COVID-1984 pandemic and the riots, the lockdown, basically to make sure that everybody was, well, prepped for what comes next. Then the tail, and the tail is not to worry. There will be violence. There will be a civil war. No matter what happens, no matter who wins, even if Trump wins big, there will be a transition. That's the tail. The transition integrity has to be guaranteed. And what does that mean? Well, it means we have to prepare the American people for the violence that's coming and for the fact that one way or another, we are getting rid of this guy that was never supposed to have been allowed to win anyway, and all that goes with it. The Wire is the next segment in The Sting, and that essentially involves election fraud, not only electronic voter fraud with software and that kind of rigging, but nowadays, of course, with tens of millions of paper ballots and the ability to destroy them based on zip code and precinct and everything else and make sure that you get rid of the ones you don't like and let the millions of others, including dead pets and dead people and vote early, vote often, all come through. Oh, yeah. Fraud is the name of the game. That leads me to the one that we're fixing to talk about now. But let me finish with The Wire and the mail-in ballot fraud and so forth, because as Jim Rickards was pointing out, and almost everybody has already been aware of for quite a while, there are only a few states where all of the marbles will rest. You can think of the names, Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and so forth. The swing states, where Trump won by a narrow margin, at least that's what we're told, probably won by quite a bit more, but that was what was big enough of a difference that it couldn't be overcome by the normal fraud measures. So that's why we've got millions upon millions, numbers 80 million and maybe more, mail-in ballots that are expected. And how many of those need to be rigged? Answer. In most of these swing states, just a few thousands will probably do it. In other words, you don't have to rig millions. Now, if you can swamp the system with tens of millions of ballots, oh wait, there's another benefit to that, which we'll get to in just a second. Both sides are gearing up for this, says Rickards. The Trump and Biden campaigns have each combination hired hundreds of lawyers, to the total over 600 lawyers on each side, to fan out across the 50 states, you know which ones they're going to focus on, demanding court orders on extended voting hours, impounding the mail-in ballots, mandatory injunctions against certifying results. Hey, what? Say what? Let me read that part again. Mandatory injunctions against certifying results. In other words, they'll force a court to say, nope, nope, you can't know who won Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, or whatever the case may be for, well, how long? Well, therein lies the rub. Maybe weeks, maybe a month, maybe until after certain dates certain. Like, say, January 3rd, January 20th. Maybe the importance of those dates is starting to become more obvious. Neither side will concede the election until all of these legal contests are resolved. A similar stalemate ensued in 2000 and ensured that the election was basically decided between Bush and Al Gore in the Supreme Court. But in that case, it was the hanging chad, right? And it was confined to just a few counties in one state, Florida. But this time, we'll have maybe 7, maybe 10 states, all crucial to the outcome. And ultimately, folks, in spite of all this, I'll say it, crap that you're hearing about, oh, every vote should count, especially if they voted 8 or 10 or 100 times and aren't even legal to begin with, or maybe they're dead already, every vote counts. Well, wait a minute. Why would then both teams have 600 lawyers each in order to fan out and argue the opposite? I couldn't help but thinking as I was looking at that sentence. Remember the old joke about what a jury is? It's 12 people selected for their ignorance who get together and vote on which side has the better lawyer. Well, in this case, why not just let the lawyers get together in a room and decide who gets to be president, because who's bought off more? Well, fill in the blanks. The presidential loser, two-time presidential loser in this case, Hillary Clinton, laid it out for us when she told Showtime, quote, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances because I think this is going to drag out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's the intent, folks, and this is why the left is planning, preparing, not just for violence, but to drag out the election. And wait a second. Where were we here? Oh, yeah, back to the sting. That brings us to the next to last element of the movie and, indeed, the play that we're watching. It's called The Shutout. The Shutout. And if you've seen the movie, you remember when the sting is just about ready to happen, something happens. I won't go into the details. And all of a sudden, before the mark, as Doyle Lanigan, the bad guy, is called, is going up to place his bet and win all of his money, there's a problem. And there's a raid, and they have to shut things down. Oh, no! Who could have imagined such a scenario? Well, the shutout, in this case, is the delay. The states. If we can just delay the election counting and certification. Doesn't take all the states, just a few states. Pennsylvania's already working on it. Michigan, you name it. All we got to do is just delay a few states, and then we can get all kinds of stuff to play out. Now, this is a scenario that I've been talking about for quite a while, but I do want to give credit where credit is due, because the last couple pieces were put into place when I listened to Richard Proctor, another constitutional fellow. I might have some differences on just a few points with Richard Proctor, but by and large, his constitutional acumen is very great. He pointed out something that I think really, really helps to, fill in the final gaps here, connect the dots. It's the 20th Amendment. You don't hear much about this one, but Article 20, Amendment to the Constitution, is vital and key, and it involves the shutout and how it is that this can play exactly the way that the far left and the Bolshevik Revolution intends it. So what I want to do for the next couple minutes is actually go through the 20th Amendment. And it says the following: the terms of the president and vice president shall end at noon on the 20th day of January. Talk about a date certain. And the terms of senators and representatives at noon on the 3rd day of January of the year in which such terms would have ended, basically if this article hadn't been ratified. And that's when the terms of the successors shall begin. Let's pause there. So, we have another date certain. January 3rd for the House of Representatives and the Senate, and January 20th for the President and Vice President. The Congress shall assemble, says the second section, at least once in every year. Such meeting shall begin at noon on the 3rd day of January, unless they by law shall appoint a different day. All right, this brings us to the place where the shutout plays out and the sting begins. If at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of the president-elect shall have died, the vice president-elect shall become president. So, Here is, you know, scenario A of many. Let's suppose that the left wins their election gambit. The Trump landslide is not big enough to overcome the fraud that's already in place. And the right goes along in their usual fashion with a whimper, not a bang, and says, oh, we're so sorry, we're now descending into tyranny, but I guess that's just the way the constitutional republic crumbles. And, of course, nobody, and that would include even the left, wants Joe Biden actually sitting with his finger on the button. So maybe he dies of COVID, or maybe he just babbles on TV. And any way you slice it, you get Kamala Harris. The vice president-elect shall become president. If a president is not chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president-elect shall serve, shall act as president until a president shall have qualified. Here we go, and the Congress may, by law, provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president-elect shall have qualified. So let's suppose, most likely scenario, let's suppose Trump wins. Let's say it's a pretty marginally large election victory, but no, we've got tens of millions, who knows, maybe hundreds of millions of ballots still to count, so we're not going to quote-unquote certify the election. Well, most states will say, oh yeah, we're done, it's obvious. He wins this state, he loses California and New York, gee, what a surprise, and so we've only got a few swing states. But how many of those swing states are already in the possession of the left? You see how this gets difficult? All we have to do, if we're the far left and we're planning on a Bolshevik revolution, is get things delayed, obfuscated, confused, chaos. A few riots will help until after the 3rd of January. After the 3rd of January, what happens? Well, the new Congress, and if the election rigging is successful enough to put the presidential election into doubt, almost certainly that means that the House remains, and they'll pick Nasty Nancy or some equally corrupt individual to be ready to sit in the chair and act as president in this temporary capacity until... Well, who knows? However, we have continuity of government to deal with, too, but that has nothing to do with the Constitution. It does have to do with the scenario that's likely to play out. So here you see it. In the case where neither a president-elect nor vice president-elect shall have qualified, and if you have a few state houses in the swing states, and you can guarantee that that won't happen by the date certain, then you can push under the 20th Amendment all of the nastiness that's in here. Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor vice president-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president. Oh, I don't know. The mind boggles, right? How many wonderful candidates do you have? Well, how many Soros puppets are out there? A whole bunch of them. How many truly nasty wannabe dictators are there? Again, you know the names, the usual suspects, but the one thing that they have in common is none of them has any respect whatsoever for the rule of law, much less the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice president shall have qualified. And, of course, once that person gets in there and does the other things they're already talking about, cramming the Supreme Court full of really disgusting people and declaring, oh, they can do whatever they darn well want to, or just declaring an end to the Constitutional Republic. You know, at this point, folks, we have come so far from the rule of law, and there'll be so much chaos that all bets are probably off anyway. I will encourage people to remember one thing. Everything Adolf Hitler did was, quote-unquote, legal. May not have been at all what we would call lawful, but it was legal under the terms of what was playing out. And that's precisely how this one will go. It'll look legal. It turns out that what we're seeing, and it's obvious to those with half a brain, is nothing short of an out-and-out Bolshevik revolution, but they will feign constitutional fealty until they can literally say, ha-ha, fooled you, and we're not even going to play that game anymore. Mr. and Mrs. America, take your guns and turn them in. Wear your masks, by the way, while you get in line to get your mark of the beast, your vaccine, and your universal basic income, or else, and the or else is, hey, guess what? The conspiracy theorists were right along. We have the FEMA camps, and we have our little hidey holes prepared. What are you going to do about it? Once people are disarmed, folks, the answer will be nothing at this point. But again, the thing I'm trying to emphasize here is we are seeing the sting in process, and the shutout is the key element. In a lot of respects, This doesn't add a whole lot to what's been obvious for quite a while. If you have enough chaos, if you throw things into enough turmoil, if you get a full ongoing civil war started, well then, hey, the left wins, and the Bolshevik Revolution ends up precisely where it's intended. But on the other hand, see, they don't even have to get their civil war going full steam. All they have to do is put enough chaos, not into all the states even, just into a few of the swing states to claim, see, nobody has qualified. And guess what? We're going to determine who and what constitutes qualifying. Oh, well, you say it's not obvious? Well, we've got our 300, 600, 800, who knows how many lawyers. They will decide. The American people, in spite of all the protestation about how we're so anxious everybody should vote, millions of times? No, none of that ultimately matters. The shutout is about making sure that the swing states and those that are in control of the left by design are able to shut out the process until long enough that they can claim, oh, look, see here? And then, folks, we have a really ugly situation. So let me review this again just in terms of the dates, because what I think is fascinating, and the reason why all of this is important now is we look forward to, or at least we look ahead to the sting, are these various dates certain? One of them coming up within less than a week. It'll reveal at least how part of this plan is going to play out. Will the far left really allow Joe Biden to debate? Honestly, come on, I don't think that's the way to bet. Will they put in a body double? If they have a debate, I would look real carefully and see who the man behind the mask really is. If he sounds cogent, it's probably not just the drugs talking through old creepy Joe. It's probably something else. By the way, if they hold the debate not in front of a live audience, but virtually anyway, how many seconds does it take with good AI and a team of Hollywood's crack people to manipulate the facial expressions and do the live software and have somebody literally speaking Joe's words and making him look intelligible and intelligent on screen? So, first date, September 29th, one way or another. If there is no debates, well, that'll give us another clue, too. Do they then replace the candidate before the election? Okay, so the second date, obviously, November 4th. Leading up until then, as we've seen with Louisville, we will probably have more opportunities for really nasty things to come down, more attempts at violence and getting the Civil War started. Who knows? Maybe the debate could still be delayed. By the way, there's one other wild card that I'll point out in here. If I was advising Trump at this point, I would say, look, Mr. President, do you not see where this is headed? The revolution is already underway. It's already in progress. The traitors are out in the open at this point. The only thing that will forestall this would literally be mass arrests of people in post offices, voter registration offices, governors' mansions in particular, state houses, in other words, and, of course, lots and lots of people, starting with Jim Comey and Andy McCabe and a whole bunch of other criminals, you know, DNI, NSA, CIA, former chair people, Brennan, Clapper, and the like. The list is long. And by the way, one of them on the list would be Joe Biden and his creepy little criminal son, Hunter, as well. Would that really raise a stink? You betcha. But you know what, folks? We're at the point where that stink and the fallout from the press, who already hates the guy anyway, let's be real, is probably less than what is coming on or immediately after November 4th if he fails to act between now and then. And then after November 4th, you've got the lockdown leading into year end. We will almost certainly have other economic fallout to contend with by then, including things like massive food price inflation, some of the economic elements of, everything leading up to the continued breakdown of the supply chains and so forth. Then you have January the 3rd and the new Congress, the 177th, followed by January 20th. And who knows what happens then. I want to do one more story quickly. Well, first this one, just to set it up. An Ohio mom was tased over the weekend and arrested at an eighth grade football game for not wearing a mask. I saw the video of this. A bystander, 50 feet away, took the photos and the video on a cell phone. Absolutely disgusting. And it amazes me that people could sit by and watch this fat pig and that's the term I'm going to use. No, not a real police officer, but a school resource officer. Somebody gave this absolute cretin, a fat slob cretin, and I'm saying that simply because I watched this with increasing anger. Couldn't restrain the woman because literally was too out of shape to even restrain her. So what did he do? He tases her and then hauls her off. And as I was looking at this and seeing the reaction of the crowd, I couldn't help but think, you know, the Scrooge left is now saying that she'd better die and reduce the surplus population. All right, we wrap things up with this. A reader sums all of what's going on ominously from the burning platform. And it's a nice letter. It's too long to do in the time that we have here. But basically it asks the question, how better to destroy the mutual trust upon which society is built by, well, the booga 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 virus, all the things that we're seeing here. We saw it with people standing by while a mother is tased in the stands at an eighth grade football game, not sitting close to anybody, but not wearing a mask outdoors. Oktoberboten, how dare she? Let's just show her who the fat pig that's in command here is. And what's the difference, asked the author of this piece, between where we are now and what happens when it's normal for the police to take the next logical steps, come to your door and arrest you for anything they darn well want? Where are we between now and an oppressive police state? Answer. The only difference is a change in, here we use a German word, the Zeitgeist, the spirit of the age, and it's increasingly a satanic spirit. All that's needed, of course, is an event to change the mood of the people, an event or a series of events to make us afraid of them, a psychological shock. Well, what have we been talking about with the sting for the last 45 minutes? The event, folks, is in progress. We have dates certain all the way along the line. The shutout is all that's left at this point, and then the sting. So imagine this November when hundreds of American cities, potentially, certainly dozens, begin to descend into the start of a civil war. Patriots turn out to stop Antifa from burning down middle America. Kamala Harris, because Joe Biden is too senile to do anything, calls for an army, the army, whichever army that is at this point, to evict Trump because he refuses to leave the White House on the grounds that he actually did win the election, while the mail-in ballots may not be counted until 2026. The author points out, because he's a Brit, that Brexit has caused problems at the port. The same thing is happening all over the UK. There's massive carnage and turmoil. Imagine if Deutsche Bank, widely considered by most of the Austrian economists I follow to be the first domino to fall, really big domino anyway. We've had lots of smaller ones to initiate the global banking crisis. Europe has no way of saving its banks. All the European economies are already so damaged, massive amounts of workers laid off. We have a Greek-style banking crisis on steroids. People are pulling out cash, exceeding the daily limits. By the way, if you haven't got yourself some silver and you know what's coming, the answer is why not? It's on sale right now anyway. Big Brother is still trying to put his finger in the dike and prevent people from realizing that, no, the paper markets have already melted down. Physical gold, by the point that all of this happens, will have already disappeared, so get what you can while you can. The banks have already pulled the plug on, by the time this happens, he suggests, the author, the airlines, and maybe there'll be no planes flying. You get the gist of it? Yeah, if you don't, FDR said it. In politics, nothing happens by accident. If something happens, you can guarantee it was planned this way. November could be Teotihuacan. Hopefully most people know that phrase by now. The end of the world as we know it. But what's the obvious goal here if it's not a police state? No one destroys the entire global economy because they're that stupid. How many people acting in concert, folks, have to be this stupid to pull off this kind of a coordinated, complete global meltdown? Answer? I believe in the stupidity of masses, the madness of crowds. But no, this goes beyond mere stupidity. This takes a literally satanic kind of organizational skill to coordinate a complete, for the first time in history, world, global, economic, political, societal meltdown. The evidence is overwhelming. Civilization is being purposefully destroyed. And when the people start realizing that Ayn Rand had it right and Atlas Shrugged, the 4%, the vital few, they call them the 4%, when they realize the system no longer works for them and they opt out, all of this will have an outsized effect on the remaining 64% that do some of the work anyway. And most likely those will be urban dwellers, largely dependent on an increasingly fragile services network that's brittle and likely to fail and indeed will. So, it's hard not to see events hitting the fan again by this November at the latest, and after that, well, then the sting really begins to play out. So plan along and understand what's going on. There are even other elements. I didn't throw them out today, but a two-part poison, right? Imagine if Big Brother decides, oh, what else was Fauci paying for? Well, COVID was a bummer, but now that we've got part one of the poison in people's systems and they're wearing their masks, hey, let's release part two. The mind boggles at all the possibilities, but the thing I'm suggesting is we know who we serve. The time is now to make sure that we recognize that it is, in fact, very real. Not only is what's playing out doing so with a vengeance, but for the first time in probably most of our lives, we now have a pretty darn good idea of when a whole bunch of ugly things are almost certainly going to happen. Call it a word to the wise.